Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, July 22nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about the new movie Oddity, and we're also going to present an interview with that film's writer-director, Damien McCarthy. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Chris, you spoke about this movie on a previous episode of the podcast and convinced me to give it a shot, and I'm very glad I did because I like this movie quite a bit. Before we get into Oddity, though, Damien McCarthy directed a movie called Caveat that came out back in 2020. Have you seen that by chance?
I actually have not seen that. I've been meaning to watch it because I liked Oddity so much.
Okay, yeah, I have not seen that one either. I was just curious. Okay, so yeah, we'll have to check that out. So let's talk a little bit about Oddity. The movie's in theaters as of today, and it will likely be coming to Shudder sometime in the next few weeks or months. But if you're looking for a good horror experience at the theater, which has been somewhat hard to come by this year, I think this will provide that. Chris, I assume since you recommended it to me a little while ago, you still think people should check this out?
Yeah, I'll be reviewing it for Slash Film, and I'll be giving it a good review. I haven't written the review yet, but it will be getting a positive review from me.
Excellent. So you talked about this last time you brought up this movie on the show, but I'll just recap it for our audience here. Oddity has one of the best opening scenes that I've seen in a long time. It is set in Ireland, largely in a big house that's out in the middle of nowhere. And this woman named Dani lives there with her husband, who works the night shift as a psychologist at an asylum of some kind. So Dani is at home alone. And in the first few minutes of the movie, she goes out to her car to try to find something, her phone or a flashlight or something like that. And then when she walks back inside, there's a knock at the door and a former occupant of the asylum is outside in the dark looking all creepy. And when she asks him what he wants, this guy basically says somebody's in the house in there with her. And we saw that she left the front door wide open when she stepped outside. But this guy is saying that while she was in the car, somebody slipped into the house and is currently in there. And so there's a lot of tension about whether or not this guy is lying, whether Dani should let him into the house, or whether she thinks he's crazy and creepy and weird and doesn't want to listen to him. So hopefully that's enough of a tease to get people to check this movie out. But I wanted to talk about some spoilery aspects of this movie with you, Chris. So spoilers ahead. If you've not seen the film, check it out. So Chris, now that we can speak freely about like every aspect of this movie, what was it that really drew you to this? What did you like about it?
It has this really great mood to it. It has like really great atmosphere. And it's almost like an old school sort of scary movie where it doesn't have, I'm trying to phrase this in a way so I don't sound like an idiot, but like, it doesn't have like a deeper meaning. That's not really what I'm trying to say here, but like, there's a trend in horror lately where everything has to have like, everything's like a metaphor. It's like the horror is a metaphor for trauma. And that's really not what this movie is doing. It's really just like, here's our really simple setup. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to scare you. We only really have one thing in mind, and that's creeping you out. And the movie does this very well. It just has like a great atmosphere. The performances are really on point, and it's just like an old fashioned scary movie. And it's like I'm not saying I don't like it when horror movies have more on their mind than just scares. Like, you know, I love horror movies. Like, I love really smart horror movies, and this is doing something almost on a simple, elemental sort of level. And yeah. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I think it's very, it's a very premise forward movie. I think you've said it very well. I liked how small scale it was. There's only like four or five characters here and the locations are pretty limited, but it still feels like a lived in real world. You know, like some horror movies have this sort of otherworldly vibe to it, and this feels like there's like maybe some supernatural stuff going on, but it feels like it's the real world. So I appreciated the way that it was able to sort of blend those two things together. I wanted to know what you thought about the character of Danny's twin sister, who's this blind woman who has this psychic connection with haunted objects. I'm always curious if like hardcore horror fans roll their eyes at stuff like that, or if you're actually excited to see a new riff on a familiar trope.
No, I really like that. I like this character. I love the concept of her like having all this supernatural stuff. Like, you know, if I would love to own a shop where I just sell cursed objects. Like, that's like my dream job. So I love stuff like that. It's such a neat premise to take that and use it to serve like a bigger story. Cause like the movie isn't really about the cursed objects. Like the current, like there are there's this big wooden dummy that she brings to the house. And like, that's a cursed object. But I feel like if this were like a Blumhouse movie, like the movie would be about that. It would be about like the cursed object. And that's really not what this movie is about. It just uses that to set itself up. And I thought that was like a neat little approach to like fleshing out the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I say this in the interview with Damien, but I really enjoyed the Yana character, the husband's new girlfriend. When she first comes on screen, I was kind of like, oh God, not this type of character. And I was really not expecting to like her as much as I ended up liking her, but I was totally on her side by the end of this. And I thought the actress, Carolyn Menton, was really great. Did you enjoy her performance?
Yeah, I think everyone in this is doing a pretty good job. I think the guy who plays Ted is going a little too hard on like what he's doing, but otherwise, like, I think everyone in the movie is doing a really good job. I think Carolyn Bracken does a really good job playing two different characters and making them seem like different people, like beyond the fact that they have different hairstyles, like they seem like completely different people. And that's, that's not easy to do when you're playing, you know, twins basically. So yeah. I think that's a neat little, performances really. And I also really like that character, it's Darcy is the one who's blind, right?
Yes. Dan. Yes.
I like that character is kind of an asshole. And I like, granted she has like, we're in the spoiler territory, so we can talk about this, but like, she has a reason for being an asshole because she suspects that Ted killed her sister, or at least had, you know, she doesn't even suspect, she knows that Ted killed her sister because she's able to discern that from touching the objects. So she like pretty much knows that Ted is responsible for her sister's death. So she has like a reason for being unlikable, but I kind of like that the movie leans into her being unlikable because she's like fully prepared to kill that Yana character, and the ghost of her sister like stops her from doing that because like Yana was not in on the murder. Like, she wasn't like a part of it. She just happens to be Ted's new girlfriend. And I kind of like that sort of like character dynamic where like if Darcy had her way, she would just flat out kill this person, and she gets she gets stopped from doing that. So I kind of like that. Like, that makes her almost unredeemable in a way, which is kind of like an interesting thing to have your main character be sort of like so bloodthirsty.
Yeah. So single-minded. Yeah. I loved the climax of this movie. I thought the tension was fantastic when all of these reveals start to become clear, and especially the bit about removing the floor at the end where it sort of, Ted is such an asshole basically. And he like is playing on the fact that, that Darcy is blind and is using that to his advantage. And, it's just such a like shitty underhanded way of going about whatever he's trying to do there. The one complaint that I had about this movie, the whole thing, really, I loved almost all of it up until the very, very, very end of the movie, where I think the haunted bellhop with the ringing bell thing should have gone unseen instead of us actually seeing him at the end. Okay, I was wondering what you thought
about that. I agree with that because not only does it like, do we not need to see him, but the makeup they use makes him look like he's from Goosebumps or something. Like,
yes.
Like, he's got like a white face. He's got like black circles under his eyes. That's how I'm remembering it. I could be and it's just like, boy, that looks goofy. It looks like he's like in the Tower of Terror ride. There's just like all like room for one more. It's like, all right, we don't need to see the ghoulish bellhop. I get what, but like that was like the only like misstep I really felt there, because like up until you see him, that's such a great, like the way he rings the bell and like the camera cuts around the room silently. Yes. And it's so like, it's like unnerving. You're just like, oh, like something's going to happen here. And then the thing that happens is kind of like, oh, there's a ghoul right there, whatever.
I just thought it would have been so much more effective to like do that thing where the camera cuts around the room and just leave the audience with the sense that Ted is going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life, waiting on this haunted bellhop to actually show up one of these days.
Yeah.
I just thought that would have been way more effective than like actually showing. Cause like, it's not like the bellhop even kills him at the end. It's just,
yeah,
like
he just standing there.
And then the movie cuts to black. So if they could have tweaked that, I think this movie would have been like, I don't know. It would have jumped up like an entire star or something in my estimation, but I already like the movie a lot as it is. So just a small nitpick there, but okay. Well, anything else you want to say about this film before you jump into the interview here?
I know, I really dug this. Like, I had heard it was good going into it, and it was like even better than I thought it was going to be. It just has such a great atmosphere. It's a genuinely creepy movie, and I'm always impressed when a movie manages to creep me out, because I've been, you know, I've grown up watching so many horror movies that like I'm desensitized to the genre. I love horror. It's like my favorite genre, but I rarely see a horror movie and I'm like, oh, that actually gave me the creeps. It's more like, I liked that. And this actually like creeped me out. And I'm always impressed when a horror movie does that.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, here is my conversation with Damien McCarthy. Hey, Damien, how are you?
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm great. Congratulations on the movie. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is The Wooden Man, which is such a striking image. What inspired that? Where did that come from?
I guess it was the idea that if it was going to be a revenge film and she was going to use supernatural tools to exact her revenge, it just felt like just to have something big and quite threatening and imposing that you could end up with the finale that we ended up with. I mean, she does have other things up her sleeve as the film goes on. I mean, she's other smaller haunted items. But this felt like something that could just be a continuous threat throughout the film, where you're just waiting for it to kick off. You know, that it was never going to hide it. The idea was always to have our wooden man sitting there in the screen for the whole film. And it would become almost comedic, because you're going, well, he's going to move at some stage, or he's got to do something, or else all of this is just a bit of a kind of a waste of time watching this. So that's for me, that was kind of the whole idea of kind of starting with that.
Yeah. How did you calibrate those moments when he does move, like before the end, when he actually like gets up and starts walking around, like, you know, when he would be in different positions and stuff? Did you go through different iterations of the script where, you know, those movements may have been different in different spots? And how did you sort of zero in on getting that balance exactly right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think even in the first cut of the film, or even some of the stuff we shot, there was little moments where his head is turning left and right, and, you know, who moved him, or his hands are in a different position. It just seems scarier and almost kind of more original just not to move him at all. Like I know he puts his head back, but you're into the third act at that stage. So it's like, okay, it's about time he's doing something. But any of the other subtle movements we had throughout it, just got rid of them. Because I mean, they've been done to death anyway. It's such a horror trope. You know, the doll was looking this way, now it's looking that way. And I find that kind of funny, but it seemed to be better to just leave him alone and just save him for the third act.
Yeah, totally. I was wondering about the actual look of the creature, the man. Like, how many illustrations did your team end up drawing up before you arrived at that final version? Like, what went into the design of him?
Pretty much, we had one go at it. We were under massive pressure to do it. We had worked with we had started with another effects company, but it just wasn't working at all. And I was very lucky to bring Paul McDonald on. My sister's makeup artist, and she had worked with Paul, and Paul had been her teacher in college, and Paul's super talented. And we basically just convinced him to said, look, we're in big trouble. We're like a month or whatever it was, 5 months from filming. We don't have a wooden man. And he was like, it's really tight. So, but because my sister, she gets on quite well with him, we convinced him to do it. And it was just a matter then of just, he started, I sent him drawings, my own kind of rough drawings of what it could look like. And it was just a matter then of just sitting down with a cup of tea on Zoom, just watching him sculpt it in front of me. And I was like, okay, let's start by cutting the nose off this thing. But I would have to say, but now in half an hour, I might be telling you it's not working. So let's bring the nose back and let's give him, you know, bigger ears and smaller ears. And it was just really, what would you say, kind of making it up as we went along. But luckily, Paul is just super talented anyway. But that thing was really put together on instinct. It was like that. Now it doesn't look scary anymore. Let's do something with his brow, or with his, you know, with the lines on his face. And so, okay, now it's starting to look a little bit creepier. And it was kind of like having one shot at it, essentially. And then it went straight to mold. And And there was just a team of people working on it then, and our stunt man had to, his body had to be molded. It was not the best way to work, but Paul was saying to me, if I'm going to do it, you're going to have to be very decisive on what you want it to look like. But I think it's kind of the job of a director is to be decisive. Go, okay, that's definitely it. Even though you might be have doubts, but go, I think that's right, you know?
Yeah, well, it paid off. It looks amazing.
Great.
There are different kinds of horror, and I was wondering if you've thought at all about how you would categorize the horror films that you like to make.
Even though I like these films, but I probably categorize the ones that I make, or maybe that I'm getting better at making, would be supernatural, claustrophobic, maybe non-violent, because any of my violence is kind of off-screen. Maybe a little bit of dark comedy in them. I don't think they take themselves too seriously, you know. I guess that would be it. Even though I love slasher movies and I love, you know, I like movies with gore and all this kind of stuff. Favorite films, Evil Dead 2 and The Thing, and yeah, I think it's probably the stuff I'd make, kind of supernatural mysteries, maybe.
I was going to say, are those the types of movies that you like to watch? But because sometimes people like to immerse themselves and think that they could never make themselves or get inspired by those types of things. I was wondering what your, I guess, what your sort of horror diet is like as a consumer.
Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah, there's a lot of films I'd watch that I'd never know how to make. Like, oh, I wouldn't know where to put the camera if I was given that script. But for horror, I would definitely gravitate towards anything with ghosts, supernatural, that kind of thing. Yeah, but I'd watch everything. I'd really do every type of horror I'd watch, and not just horror too. I love, you know, comedies and action movies and all this kind of stuff as well. It'd be very varied. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any specific cinematic influences that went into making Oddity, like anything that you were either trying to emulate or sort of tip the cap to?
Yeah, there'd always be the same films I'd go back to before watching something. A lot of South Korean cinema randomly. I seem to watch a lot of Bong Joon-ho stuff or Chan-wook Park. Even though there's nothing like this in, I don't think Oddity has that. It's just that those films feel quite internal and claustrophobic, and their framing is just so brilliant. Just really tried to be inspired by the way they made those films. And then in terms of influence and horror, I mean, it's such a big mishmash of stuff. I mean, there's a little bit of kind of psychological horror in it, that there's ghosts in it, and if somebody's not afraid of ghosts, it would be you know, that there's a threat of violence. I mean, there's some quite you know, sick people in it, some very dangerous characters in there. Yeah, I tried to tick a few boxes for sure in terms of giving people a good range of different things to be scared of, you know.
So you mentioned the supernatural a couple times, and in this movie, you sort of play with that notion of whether or not the supernatural really exists. And I was wondering if you ever find yourself putting up storytelling guardrails in the early stages of writing your scripts to sort of help you narrow down what kind of movie you want to make.
I would, in terms of maybe the pacing, you know, like, is this going to be like, let's say I had made a film before, I'd made short films, but I'd made one feature before this was Caveat, and that was very much, let's say one of the things I really would have kept in mind with that is I'm going to try to save everything for the end of the film. This is going to be really, everything's going to be in the third act, and there was, you know, budgetary reasons for that, and just in terms of, we only had one character to follow. But with this, what I wanted to do was I'd like there to be a scare, you know, every 10 minutes. Like every 10 minutes, there'd be something to kind of, you know, jolt you awake if you're nodding off, or something to put you on edge. So that's, if that answers the question, that's probably an approach I had to it. But anything else, I suppose, if it's in terms of guardrails or something I was trying to avoid, maybe violence. I thought that even the murder scene that we have in it's very much off camera, and it's really intentional, though, even the way it's shot, it kind of just skips past it. And it was just like, I felt that me as a filmmaker, I didn't know what I could do that would be so violent to show this happening, when she's killed. And I mean, it would be quite nasty to show it as well. So I kind of felt like, wouldn't that might spoil the film somewhat? It might pull people out of it, because it might have taken from that little thread of comedy that's going through it as well. That was probably one thing that I was trying to avoid. Yeah, let's try to keep it on the more supernatural and a little bit off camera with that kind of stuff.
I thought that was an exceptionally effective decision because that opening scene is just so spectacular and almost feels like it could work as a short film or something all to itself. You know, I was wondering if you remember coming up with that scene first, or if you reverse engineered that scene after having come up with another component first. How did that work?
It's really good you spotted actually, because the whole, for me, the whole film is that the whole idea of oddity is that it's a, I write all the time and I'll write something that's like, oh, great, this is definitely a story of A to B and there's only one way you can tell this, and I've got my three acts, but a lot of the characters in this and a lot of just the situations they're in, the settings, we'll say Tighe's character, who's Olin, they were all scenes that I've had for years, and I was like, I could just turn this into a short film. I like this idea, but I don't know what to do with it. This scene doesn't really have a home, and it became this thing of like, every time I make a film, I'm worried that I won't get to make another one. So it's like, if I could make one more film, and after Caveat, I felt like I had another chance to do one. So I said, I'm going to take all of these scenes that I really like, and instead of making a short film, I'm just going to spend a, you know, I spent a couple of years at it, and just seeing if I could, you know, weave these stories together and bring these characters together and see if I could use them up in this way. It was only when I got to the edit with like, this was actually kind of risky because, you know, our ghost's going to work alongside this murder mystery, alongside these haunted items, alongside these kind of the slasher kind of thing that's happening in it. Luckily though, I haven't seen any criticism that says this thing is just all over the place, but they did seem to kind of all blend together nicely. So
Yeah,
again,
that's wild to hear because it does not feel like that at all. It all feels very much of a piece. So that's like the most surprising thing that I've heard about this movie. That's insane.
That's good. I mean, the option would have been there just to make, you know, short films like the guy trying to talk his way into the house, and there'd be a very clear ending to that. And then something about a haunted desk bell, it'd be a very easy way to do that, just as short films. But I said, there's got to be a way to tie these ideas together in a better way. But yeah, so I think it
That's very
worked.
cool. I want to talk about the Yana character for a second. When that character first came on the screen, I was like, oh, this is the snooty new girlfriend. The audience is not really supposed to like her. But by the end of the movie, I ended up really being on her side. So tell me about creating that character and then working with Caroline Menton to bring her to life.
It is that. I mean, that's the idea. She's supposed to be that kind of, I mean, there's a lot of, I guess there's some, you know, archetypes in it, and it's, yeah, it's supposed to be that kind of, oh God, that this girl is this snob, I can't wait till she gets killed, and she's like one of the, you know, she's one of the few people with the intelligence to go, I'm leaving, I'm just gonna leave the story. Carolyn's great. Carolyn's great. She's just, I think it was her first role, possibly. I know she'd been in a few short films, but she's fantastic. I mean, obviously in real life, she's a completely different character. She's very funny and very relaxed. I mean, she's nothing like this, but she really got it. She got that idea, but definitely directing with her, working with her, I kind of felt like my job was never to net would be so she wouldn't come across unlikable. You know, it's not like we don't want it to be a character the audience going, I can't wait till she gets killed, because that's just it. It's one thing to have an annoying character, but then it's just annoying to watch as well. It's like, you just didn't want that. You know, you kind of
Yeah.
want it to be, let's just try to make her entertaining and a little bit like she's kind of the one sane person in the film too. So
Yeah.
let's try to have it from that. So I guess that was the idea with her.
Yeah, she was awesome. All right, so I think I probably have time for one more question. I'd like to ask you about what I found to be the scariest moment in the movie, which is the moment when Yana's watching the video on the camera and then Danny's ghost appears on the screen while she's watching and then also shows up in her room. So I was wondering if you could just talk me through conceiving and executing that moment.
Originally Ted used to come home from work and he'd find her sitting at a bank of monitors, or sitting at like her big TV was broken up into all these different security cameras from all around this estate that they're doing up slowly. And it was just going to end up being this big black screen was going to meant that we'd be filming for the whole, you know, for the whole film, we'd have this black mirror essentially. And that's kind of where the idea of the camera came in, and that just led to those double scares of her being able to just as easily show him her pictures that she's obsessed with, as opposed to a bank of monitors. And then she'd be able to take it to the room with her and show the camera. And all of this just came up in the first, I think, kind of in our walkthrough of the set in those first few days. And the idea with it was just to try to do like a double jump scare essentially. And I hadn't seen it really done that close together. I'm going to see like, okay, if I can, let's see if I can catch people out with something that's going to seem kind of obvious, but then just try to catch them again. And just but have it obviously like any scare, you try to make it feel earned. But let's see if you can do it, and then do it again straight away, and really give her a very clear, obvious reason why she'd like to get out of that house. And again, a lot of that stuff is just kind of made up as you go along, because, like I was saying, you don't want a big TV monitor there for the in camera for the whole scene, for the whole of the shoot. Yeah, that's probably where that idea came from.
Yeah, that was wonderful. All right, well, I'm out of time with you, but congratulations on the movie, and I'm very excited to see how this film is received and then what you do next. So thanks very much for the time today.
Oh, good. Thanks, Ben. Thank you very much.
All right, I wanted to mention that Chris's review is going to be linked in the show notes for this episode. Oddity also appears on our list of the 19 best horror movies of 2024 so far. I'm going to link to that in the show notes as well if people want to check out maybe some other recommendations in the genre. That's a good place to start. So you can find more about Oddity at slashfilm.com, and Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of nursing, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our online RN to BSN, MSN, or DNP degree programs allow you to balance online coursework with local in-person clinical, practicum, or immersion hours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.